This is Here and Now, and let's get back to our top story, the situation in Ukraine, which the British Foreign Secretary is calling the biggest crisis in Europe this century. We're joined now by someone who understands firsthand the top-level diplomacy that's going on between the U.S., the EU, and Russia. Stephen Pfeiffer is former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine and a senior analyst at the Brookings Institution. He's with us now. Stephen Pfeiffer, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, things are moving.
I wish I could be under different circumstances.
Of course. Well, things are moving very quickly now. We have gone from President Obama telling the Russians not to move into Ukraine on Friday to the Russians taking positions at these strategic posts in Crimea. It's very easy to start talking about a global crisis here, but how would you describe the seriousness of the situation?
I think the British Foreign Secretary had it about right. This is a big crisis, and you've got various pieces in play. The only way that you can now describe Crimea, which is a part of Ukraine and recognized, including by Russia as a part of Ukraine, is it is under Russian military occupation. Fortunately, Ukrainian forces in Crimea have acted with great restraint, I think under orders from Kyiv. They have not engaged the Russians. So the Ukrainians are trying to do what they can to sort of keep things under control.
Play that out for us, because why would they not want to fight back, for example, in Crimea against Russians?
Crimea is a particular area. Bear in mind that there actually have been Russian military forces stationed in Crimea for the Black Sea Fleet and associated units going back to the breakup of the Soviet Union, and they were allowed to be there by treaty between Ukraine and Russia. What happened, though, beginning on Friday, was these troops began to do things that went way beyond the permitted agreement in terms of taking over airports, setting up roadblocks, and then you've had introduction of further Russian forces coming into the area from Russia proper.
What is Russia's end game here? How do they get out of this situation?
This is a hard one to figure out. I would think that most Western analysts a week ago would have said Moscow, and particularly Vladimir Putin, are very unhappy with what had happened in Kyiv and the coming to power of a new government after Viktor Yanukovych, the previous president, fled Ukraine. Analysts would have predicted that the Russians would do some things to sort of keep that new government a little bit uneasy, to try to destabilize it. But we all expected it would be economic levers, perhaps raising the price of gas, cutting off in the trade to Russia, things like that. And what happened is Mr. Putin has jumped over this and went right to this military step. Now, this does definitely put Ukraine on edge. The end game, though, I think at this point remains to be seen, and perhaps Moscow has not yet decided what it wants to play next.
So you think the U.S. was caught off guard by the Russian decision to send in troops?
My guess is that not just the U.S., but Europe. I think people in the U.S. government expected that there would be some sort of Russian pressure on the Ukrainian government, but it was expected more to be economic rather than this kind of military grab.
How afraid is Russia of the idea of sanctions from the United States or visa bans or any of the economic levers that the U.S. could pull?
Well, I think these levers do have some impact. First of all, you know, one thing that's very important to Vladimir Putin is this international legitimacy that Russia is a player on the stage. Given the reaction that we're seeing coming out of Moscow now, it didn't go down well that yesterday the other seven members of the G8 put out a joint statement saying, because of this action in Ukraine against Ukraine, we are halting preparations for the G8 summit planned to be held in Sochi in June. And I think now it looks like Washington is looking at the possibility of financial measures. There are believed to be a lot of Russian money in assets that are in American banks or European banks, in part because there's not a lot of confidence in the Russian banks. And you know, if there was a way to go after those assets and do asset freezes, that could have an impact.
An impact being what? That Putin would decide to pull back?
Putin will not make an overt pullback, but at least we want to try to steer him to some kind of a negotiating process that might give him a face-saving way to step down. The one positive news over the weekend was Chancellor Merkel apparently had a conversation with Putin, out of which there seemed to be some possibility of setting up a contact group or some kind of a mechanism for a dialogue that might allow for de-escalation. And unfortunately, we haven't seen a lot of de-escalation from the Russian side over the last week.
What is Europe? Excuse me. What is Europe's role in this, and how big a role will they have to play along with the United States?
Europe has a big role for a couple of reasons. One, a lot of the sorts of sanctions that they're talking about on the financial side are going to have much greater impact if they're taken jointly by the United States and Europe. Obviously, if you're going to decide to boycott Sochi, that involves not just a decision by the United States, but in Europe, the British, the French, the Germans, and the Italians. So there are a lot of players there. But I think also Europe has to ask. I mean, this is not the sort of thing that you thought you would see in the aftermath of the Cold War. This is a Russian military invasion of territory that they have previously and repeatedly recognized as Ukrainian territory, after which, and they have repeatedly said that they would respect Ukraine's territorial integrity. Does Europe really want to let that kind of ripping up of the international rules pass unnoticed? There has to be a reaction here.
Well, let me just play devil's advocate on that for a second, because what if the U.S. and Europe were to say, you know what, let them have Crimea. We're not going to get into a war over this.
I think it's probably right. I don't think anybody in the West is talking about going to war over Crimea. But again, if the Russians rip up the rules here, where do they change the rules next? For example, the Russian argument for going into Crimea was that ethnic Russians were at risk. There is zero evidence that there was any threat last week to ethnic Russians or, in fact, the Russian military installations in Crimea. But you don't want to encourage this sort of behavior, because if you look at some of the NATO members, Estonia and Latvia each have significant ethnic Russian populations. Well, what happens if the Russians say, we need to go to protect those people? That then you have, it's not the case of Ukraine where there's a U.S. and British security assurance to Ukraine. If you're talking about the Baltic states, as members of NATO, it's a security guarantee. We're obligated by treaty to come to their defense.
Right.
So I think it's very important that the West now send a very strong signal to Moscow that this kind of behavior is simply unacceptable. We don't want to encourage them to believe that they could get away with it again in the future.
Stephen Pfeiffer, just a few seconds left, but what are you going to be watching for over the next 24 hours?
I'll be watching to see, I think it'll be Secretary Kerry's visit to Kyiv tomorrow, I think will be a useful signal of support to Kyiv. The thing I'm still watching is, do the Russians restrict military activities to Crimea, or do they make what would be a horrendous mistake in doing a modern, a broader military intervention into eastern Ukraine? And I think in that case, the Ukrainian military would fight.
Stephen Pfeiffer, former ambassador to Ukraine and senior analyst at the Brookings Institution. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
This is Here and Now.